Okay, wait, let me do this again. Okay. Three, two, one. Hey, Bessie, it's your favorite caffeinated, medicated, and never hydrated Bessie. It's your favorite nurse, Nurse John, and welcome back to your favorite podcast. I beg your pardon. Do me a favor, wherever you're listening right now, do this with me. We're going to do some self, you know, self-love, self-awareness, self-praise, because we need that. We got to appreciate ourselves. So wherever you are, in your car, at home, at work, walking, doing groceries, do this with me for 1 second, okay? Tell yourself, I am so proud of myself. I am proud where I am right now in this moment. I deserve all the good things in life, and it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay not to be okay, and there's always another day to be great. Doesn't that feel better, Bessie? Yes, keep doing that, Bessie. You know what? Self-affirmative things, I think, helps a lot. Just to, you know, sometimes we are too hard on ourselves. We criticize ourselves way too much that we don't appreciate the little things in the world, the things that we've done in our lives. And the thing, though, Bessie, is like 5 years ago, imagine this. This is how I think of things. 5 years ago, I wish a lot of things. And actually, all of those things have been granted. But now, since 5 years ago too, I have had new things that I want in my life. But I think here in North America, where we live right now, we don't practice gratitude. We don't practice being proud of the things that we achieved and we prayed for long time ago, because you achieved it, Bestie. And you should be proud, even small, medium, large achievements in life, right? Well, Bestie, I just want to make sure that you realize that and you believe in those things. So yeah, that's a good introduction, don't you think, you guys? So anyways, before we start, to do me a quick favor, Bestie, make sure that you download this episode and all other episodes, and make sure that you follow us and turn on notification on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It sounds like an ASMR for me. I mean, I don't have the best voice, you guys, but it just sounds so ASMR-y. I think it's the mic. But yeah, so follow us on Spotify and Apple, and make sure that you share it and tag I Beg Your Pardon on Instagram, and me, of course. And Bessie, make sure that you leave us a 5-star on Apple too and Spotify. And also, if you are wondering what kind of brand of scrubs I wear whenever I teach as a nursing clinical instructor, it's Gardmala, baby. Always and forever, GARDE space MALADE. It's a Quebecois company that I support and love the most. And if you ever get yourself one, you can always use my discount code, Nurse John, only one N, GM, NURSEJOHNGM. Love you guys. And I know you guys are so excited to find out who is my guest for this week. This is one of the people who are very close to the trauma, to the struggles. And one of the people that I consider our siblings, nurses, that was separated at birth, but had the same fate in life, just like us nurses and even teachers. Well, guess what, guys? My guest today is a social worker. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I am doing good.
Doing amazing. Can you please introduce yourself? What is your name?
Of course. So my name is Jackie.
Jackie.
I'm a social worker.
Oh my God. How's that?
Wow.
That's what we're going to be talking about.
That's what we're going to be talking about today.
Exactly. So Jackie, tell us all about you, like who you are as a person before you become a social worker.
So I am Jackie. I am a Filipina. I'm a Filipina.
Wait a second. You're a Filipina?
Excuse me?
You're
I beg your pardon.
Pardon.
Pardon me. I am. I'm a Filipina, born in Montreal, but Filipina. My parents are my dad's from Bicol. My mom is from Manila.
Oh, my God.
But I am born here in a family of four siblings. So I am the middle child.
Oh my God. I already have so much questions like running in through my head right now. But keep going. Keep going.
Middle child of siblings of four. Mm-hmm. I have an older sister, two younger brothers. I'm also a wife.
I've
been married for a year now.
Congratulations to us. Oh my, that's so sweet.
So married for a year and also a new mom. So I have...
Do you guys see her? She's achieving too many things at once. But you know what? She deserves it for being a social worker, for being an amazing person, and being a Filipino in general. Anyway, so yeah, continue.
So I am a new mom. I have a almost 3-month-old at home.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And how does that feel?
Oh, wonderful. Honestly, everything that you hear about motherhood, that once your baby is born, it changes you. It does. It's a gift. It's beautiful. Right. And just what a baby does also to your marriage. It's beautiful to see how our marriage has grown since we've had our baby.
Aww.
My husband being a dad, it's beautiful, honestly.
Right. Seeing your relationship grow in from being two to now three.
Exactly.
And like, oh, that is so sweet. I mean, congratulations.
Thank you.
And I guess you're in maternity leave from being a social worker.
I am. So
good for you.
I'm on mat leave, enjoying the mat leave life, but missing the drama.
As a social worker, for sure. So since you've already said my favorite word, drama, my first ever question to you is, you're a Filipina specifically. How the hell are you not a nurse?
The question that everyone asks me, how did I not become a nurse?
So for anyone who doesn't know, most Filipino, 95% of us are nurses. No, it's I'm exaggerating here, but a lot of us, for some reason, when we immigrate to another country, we're just nurses. All of us. And every single hospital and every single unit in a hospital at least has one Filipino nurse in it.
Of course.
And what made you go to social work over nursing? Didn't Nanay and Tatay force you?
1,000%. I mean, was I forced? No.
No.
But definitely when the topic of, you know, figuring out what I was going to be doing with my life.
Right.
The first suggestion was nursing.
You know what, Jackie? I don't understand why they do that.
But you know what? I have to say, it's probably because it's such a well-known profession.
Right.
So it's,
right. And I think it's also stemming from our culture because we're very hospitable. We're known to be hospitable. We're known to be, we care for people as much as we care for ourselves. Just like how we care for our family, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I came straight from the Philippines. I lived there for 17 years of my life. So I know the life. And I know how, like, you know, we live in a compound. Everyone is together. Everyone shares the same food, the same, you know, like we share everything. And when we have foreigners, like Americans, Canadians, or whatever they're coming from, we always treat them like families.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the reasons why they always come back to our country is because of how we treat them.
Yeah. Filipinos are just so hospitable. And I think that it just comes down to that. You know, if you think of nursing is a helping profession. And it just happens to be one of the more common helping professions. Being a doctor, because, you know, other than that.
Right.
It was either a doctor or a nurse.
or an engineer.
Or an engineer or a lawyer.
Right. But those other three professions needs money.
Exactly.
And nursing is the less expensive, even though it's still expensive in the Philippines for us to really do take. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, like, and people have asked me too anyways. They're like, John, so were you a nurse in the Philippines before you come here? Not really. Because I did college in the Philippines before I got here, before my mom, like, take me. And while I was waiting for my immigration papers. And the thing is, I was taking mass communications because I wanted to go to like TV or become a broadcaster or like, you know, behind the cameras and stuff. Because I never really wanted to be like a personality or something or nothing about nursing. Mm-hmm. But like I said, like it all stems from my grandpa's sickness. And then just again, like my mom working, she's a caregiver. She's been a nanny for like 20 years and, you know, seeing her strive to bring me to where I am right now, I think impacted a lot of like how I wanted to do something in my life and just like, you know what, nursing is the only thing.
Yeah.
But then if you realize it, social work too.
Yeah, there are so many helping professions.
Right.
That was for sure. When I was figuring out in after high school and college, what did I want to do?
Right.
I definitely knew I wanted to be in the helping profession.
Mm.
How? What? I had no idea. And mm-hmm. honestly, it happened to be a fluke. Because I went to an open house at a college here in Montreal, and the first table that I happened to go to was the social service table.
Wow.
And I will always remember this day. And the lady that was there, the director of the program at the time, was like, "Are you that friend that everyone always calls? Or are you that friend that, you know, is always listening to others?" And I was like, "Oh, is this...
Wait,
is this me?
I think I'm in the wrong profession because that's me."
And I swear, I didn't even really know what social work was at that point.
Right.
And it was just the qualities that really spoke to me that I kept that pamphlet.
Mm-hmm.
I did the whole tour of the college. And at the end of the day, that first interaction really struck me.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept the pamphlet and I read it over and over again. And I was like, "I'm not really sure what this is, but I'm feeling it." And I remember calling my mom after the open house. And I said, "Mom," she's like, "So what are you thinking? Nursing?" And I said, "I think I'm going to go into social services." And she said, "What the heck is that?"
Oh my God. The first reaction, the most common reaction is like, "What the hell?" It's like, "I want to be a comedian. What the hell?"
She said, "What is that?" And I said, "To be honest, I don't really know, but I'm going to figure it out, and I think this is what I'm going to do." I did the DEC. So it's a DEC is the equivalent of a college program here in Quebec.
Quebec, yeah.
So it's a technical program that after the program, you could already be working as a technician in social work. So I did that program, fell in love with it, and I said, "You know what?
Aww.
I have to continue." Did my bachelor's in social work. And have now been a social worker for almost 8 years now.
Oh my God, so, congratulations. You're hitting a decade soon.
I'm almost hitting a decade.
Wow. So you must really love this profession.
Because I would have been gone. Because if you hate it.
I know, right?
Go.
I know. Oh my God. So it was never really like a passion that you were like.
No.
You just wanted to go to a profession that is helping others.
Exactly. And through the programs, which is great, in the technical program at the DEC, you do 3 stages, so you had a lot of exposure to it, and it happened to be that by doing the studies, by doing the stages, I fell in love with the profession,
mm-hmm.
and it is a passion now. You know, it's
being
a social worker is a part of me.
Listen, if you're in the profession for 8 years, I think you actually love it, and this is a passion that you're doing, because again, like I said, social workers are just like nurses and teachers. We go through so much and deal with so much trauma that it becomes part of our life.
Yeah.
And we're so numb with it that the reaction is just like, okay, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I've seen that before. Like there's not much of like a shock or something like that. That's cool to know that, you know, you got into something that you actually love.
Yes.
Because in contrary of like, you know, Filipino being nurses,
mm-hmm.
is the thing is like a lot of them were forced to go into nursing.
Exactly.
And I have heard many stories because, you know, they reach out to me in my social media and they're like, "John, you know, I actually wanted to be a dance choreographer, but here I am as a nurse." And I was like, do both. I was like, dance in the unit, dance in the hallway or something.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's so fun. And it's so nice to know that you can go to any other careers as a Filipino. If you're a Filipino listening to this, you can be anything and everything else.
Please be whoever you want to be, wherever you want to be. Take up your space. Filipinos are not only in nursing. We mm-hmm. can be everywhere. And honestly, I did say that my mom had a surprised reaction when I first told her.
Right.
But now...
She's probably the proudest.
She's the first one to say, "Jackie's a social worker. I'll give you her number and she'll help you with this." I'm like, "No,
Mama." She's so cute. Oh my God.
It doesn't work that way. I will help when I can. But
right.
But they are, you know, I'm proud to say, you know, I've exposed them to what the profession of social work is now. And both my parents, my family have a better awareness of what it is. And
that's amazing.
So it's great. So please do what you want to do as long as you're happy, you know?
Right. Again, at the end of the day, every single profession, I think, has its own struggle. And the struggle is also, if you love this profession enough, no matter what the struggle is, yes, you will get through it.
Exactly.
But also, setting boundaries and knowing your limits.
1,000%. Boundaries.
Right?
Boundaries,
right.
Boundaries, 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 boundaries.
I love that you repeat that because some people, some of my besties out here doesn't still know boundaries. I mean, I didn't know boundaries until like a year ago when I burnt out from nursing. But then remember, guys, I keep repeating this in every single podcast episode, boundaries. Anyways, going back into your life. So you went into social work and you fell in love with it. Isn't the only
It's the only career I've ever had. So, I mean, other than being a working student and doing the retail life that I did as a working student.
Oh my God, you went to retail too?
I was in retail. That's how I paid for my studies.
Me too, girl.
You know, I worked in retail. Probably spent too much money with your employee discount, but
I love it.
But this is the only career I've ever had.
I've worked in many retails because that's the only way for me to pay for my bills and stuff. And I actually like working as a student.
I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I really did.
Like the freedom of having money.
Yes.
And not depending on your parents.
Yes.
Because, you know, our parents are always, oh, don't worry, we got you. We can keep you for like 40 years of your life and type of thing. But I needed that like security and independence of like, you know, I can make my own money and I got this. Yes. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so social work. Wow, this is such a big word. I mean, like, I also did not know about social work until I worked in healthcare and until I went to nursing school because they taught us how, like, social workers are your best friends. Mm-hmm. And they legit are our best friends because they are the people that I go to before I even discharge my patients because knowing a lot of things from them, I'm like, I just don't have the capacity and the ability and the connections to figure this out for you. Because usually when they're in the hospital, right, they will tell me all the things they have. The usual thing that happens is like, John, my wife took all my money and now my house is in my wife's name, but I bought it and this. I was like, okay, stop right there. I was like, this is not my... I was like, this is not my circus. So that is the first thing I do is like, hi, can I please be passed at a social worker working today? Yeah, one of my favorite social worker. I cannot mention her name, but I love her so much. That's a police right there. Do you guys hear the sirens? What's going? I hope we're not burning up in here. Hopefully. My fight or flight is just so like on the go every time since working in the ER. But anyways, going back to our conversation is that, you know, you guys, when it comes to like family problems, financial problems, all of this stuff, you guys are who we run to.
Yeah.
Can you give us a rundown of a usual day as a social worker?
So social workers is quite broad, actually. So social workers will be involved with people from the age of zero to the end of life.
Right.
So really, it's the spectrum of life in all aspects of the world.
So it's almost like nursing.
Exactly. So you'll see social workers in different settings, in the community, in hospitals specifically.
Right.
I do relate a lot to Nurse John because I am a hospital social worker as
well. Oh, you are? I should have asked that first. What kind of social worker are you?
Exactly. So I'm a hospital social worker. I did the beginning of my career in community at the CLSC. So that's locally here in Quebec.
Right. What's CLSC in English?
So it's the local community services.
Oh, right.
So
right.
That's like, I guess, what it would translate to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really people within the services within the community. So
right.
When I worked there, I was working in the home care department. So going into people's homes and I still with an aging population. So that's what I was doing. But now I am a hospital.
You're a hospital social worker. Sure. We're going to break this down little by little.
Yes.
You know what? Let's go back to when you were working in the home care.
Yes.
Isn't that scary?
So home care, honestly, it's one of the most thrilling, most exciting.
Oh my God.
But
okay, girl.
Also, you could have the worst horror stories also because you're going into people's homes.
Right.
So I was working with the aging population or people in loss of autonomy because of different health reasons.
Yeah, right.
So we worked again with a team of multidisciplinary professionals. So nurses, occupational therapists, physiotherapists, doctors, and a social worker was one of them. So we would go in and kind of see what the situation was, evaluate what their needs are. Were there any home care services that were needed? Were there any other professionals that would be needed? And then just providing, we were evaluating to see what the needs were of the clients that we have. So they were experiencing different types of loss of autonomy, whether it be cognitive loss of autonomy, physical loss of autonomy. So we were working with those clients, but often we were working with their caregivers, so their families.
Okay, so they have an existing caregiver.
Yes.
At home.
It could be a spouse, it could be a child, it could be a family member, but it also could be, you know, a private caregiver that was hired by the family or by the person themselves. So
right.
Depends. So we were working with
whoever is there.
The person that is completely isolated as well, because that also happens. Someone that's in total.
That's super sad to me.
Yes.
And I've heard so many stories because, you know, when people get admitted in my unit before, they're usually like found after like 3 days because they fell down.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, CLSCs or community services are so important for people that are isolated because they are the eyes. You know, when people come to the hospital, you get a snapshot of what their life is. But
never really the yes, big picture of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Going into the homes, you really see how they're living.
Right.
And
have you ever been in a situation where you're just like, oh my God, this is a complete disaster?
Yes, I've been to hoarded homes, bed bug homes, cockroach infested homes.
Girl, I cannot. Oh my God.
Name it. I've been in it.
But you still,
those are not my favorite ones to go in.
Oh, for sure.
Obviously,
you
look like a Q-tip entering those homes with the gowning that you have to do. But you see the beautiful homes.
Oh yeah, the amazing homes, the big homes. You're like, oh my God, I could live here. You could hire me as your nanny, and I will take that money because you're probably gonna pay me better. Exactly. But yeah, so going back to the homes are like a bit lesser than like the beautiful homes. Yes. Don't you feel scared coming in those rooms because? Like, for example, me, like, I don't, you know, we don't let stranger just come in to our place.
Yes.
But imagine you coming into a stranger's place and really, you don't know. They could be someone who could have some mental illness and they're really, like, not in a good state. Or someone who's, you know, you've heard a lot of, like, stuff in the internet that makes you just like, oh, my God, I am not doing this.
So it actually always makes me laugh. And again, maybe this is just me being unfazed, but you know, in the rest of the world, I don't know how it works, but here in Canada, I was going to these homes with my notebook and a pen. Okay, there was no accompaniment by police officer. There were some exceptional situations, but your regular day was entering this home by myself, you
unarmed.
Know, based on whatever I read on the paper.
So your weapon is
my
your
weapon
pen is your no- and
is
your
my
notebook.
Notebook and my cell phone and my pen. But honestly, you just always have to be vigilant. And whenever you work in healthcare, no matter where you are, be vigilant.
Right.
If you are doing home care visits, always be mindful. When entering the home, look for the exits.
Good tips.
You're entering, look for the exits.
Right.
And, you know, you go with your gut feeling and always try to be closest to the door as much as possible.
Right.
Obviously,
I would probably stay in, like, just in the front. I'm good here. I didn't have to sit on your couch.
I mean, that's always what you say when there are bed bugs, you know. I've been sitting all day. No, thank you. You know, it's okay.
Like, I'm good. I'm good here. Yeah, we got to keep a distance, 5 meters.
You know, and like, keep moving your legs in case those critters try to crawl up your legs. But
I can just imagine it. Were you working in home care during COVID?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Well, that's an interesting topic to talk about because during COVID, I think it's one of the hardest time for a lot of people.
Yes.
And mostly for those people who lost autonomy or isolated, because most of us, even the capable ones, were isolated. But imagine those who are unable physically, mentally to be, you know, to be out of their homes, but stuck in there for a while.
Exactly.
How did you dealt with that?
So it was a pretty stressful time, actually, just as a healthcare professional. Because at that time, the directives were changing, I swear, every 24 hours.
Thank you. Nobody understands how, like, you're like, you are supposed to wash your hand for 5 seconds. Now it's actually 1 minute.
I mean, just to give you an idea of what it was, at the beginning of the pandemic, I'll never forget March, whatever it was, when everyone decided that COVID was happening, we were all summoned to one room, and there were probably 200 people in that room. All of the professionals from the CLSC were in that room, and they were like, there is something that is coming. We don't know what it is, but be mindful. We were all there.
Right.
1 week later, everyone must stay at their desks. Nobody can have lunch together. And then the next week, everyone's going to work on alternate weeks, work from home, because, I mean, the directives were just all over the place.
It's hideous.
And just trying to keep up with that while doing your regular job, which was not a regular job at that point because you were just doing whatever the directives were. At some point, the social workers were delivering masks on a weekly basis in the homes. I couldn't even spend time with the clients that I wanted to because we had to go deal. But mind you, you know, people needed those masks too.
For sure.
But we were doing deliveries of masks and deliveries of hand sanitizer, deliveries of all of these things.
Right.
And at the beginning of the pandemic, we were given one mask per day.
Oh my God, please. And we had to wash it at some point.
So we were doing home visits. COVID broke out March 2020, which means we went into the summer. So it was hot, okay? Oof. We were doing home visits. I was holding my mask like this driving. Wouldn't get, you know, eventually.
Crazy.
Eventually we got more masks. But just to give you an idea of what it was, and when we were so concerned about the resources, we had one bottle of sanitizer and we could only get a new one if it was empty. I would have to return an empty bottle of sanitizer to be able to get a new one.
Are you hearing this, besties? And thank you for solidifying that, because a lot of people don't believe the complaints we've been, like, you know, screaming out there since 2020, because they're like, oh my God, you're exaggerating things. That's not how bad it is. Yeah. You guys are well paid. I was like, please.
I mean, you know, so.
You know what I mean?
It was a tough time. And all of that, trying to figure out, you're allowed to see your patients, you're not allowed to see your clients, you're allowed to go into the house, you're not allowed to go into the house. If they have this, you wear your mask. If they don't have this, you wear your mask. So it was like,
the thing is, like, another thing is, in the hospital, sometimes, like, we've been taking care of the patient for like 6-7 hours, and they're like, oh, that patient is actually COVID positive. Imagine you guys who doesn't have that directive and just like coming back from like the home visit and be like, oh, your patient actually has a C. diff and a bunch of other things that you weren't aware of.
You would hope you would get that communication from the hospital. But going into the homes too, you also, it's prior to them being hospitalized or being tested at the time that it wasn't accessible. So you never knew what people had.
So my question to that is, since you said that, you know, like, when they get back to their homes, usually they came from the hospital.
Yeah.
And that was dealt by a social worker, most likely.
Yes.
So what is your thought of that? Because since you're a social worker working from homes, you're basically catching whatever is left by the social worker from the hospital.
Yes.
What do you think is that? Let's say the situation is really, like, bad.
Yeah.
And thinking about it to yourself, you're just like, wait, this is done? Like, if my colleague from the hospital has done their job properly, this would never happen. Because we've had that situation, you know, as nurses, like, patients couldn't have been like this if the nurse taking care of this patient before just done their job.
There are certain things that carry over, but social workers in hospitals and social workers in the community have different roles, because in terms of your follow-up and when you're involved, it's different, right? When you work in the community, you will have to take on some of the things that are a little bit more long-term because you're going to continue to follow.
Right.
In the hospitals, you're there for a very short short period of time.
Right,
I'm going
right,
to put this in brackets. Right. Short period of time. So it's different. But it is true. I mean, I would just hope that, again, to all my social workers out there, we have to work together. You know,
right.
It's a collaborative
effort. I think that's it. That's it.
But if there are things that could be done on one side, we just have to help each other, you know, because we're all working in this
together. We're all struggling. I love that. I love the answer, because that answer also says that, you know, like, we're here to help each other.
Exactly.
That this is not you against me or me against you. It's more of like, we're going to do this together against the problem, the real problem.
Yeah, and it's all about continuity of care. That's all. I always say that. You know what?
Thank
continuity
you.
Of care is so important.
Right.
So there's no sense or no use in working in silos as professionals, as social workers.
Thank you.
I like working as a team is
the most important.
The most
thing.
Important.
And, exactly.
And people don't see that, but it just, you're backpedaling if you work in your corner. You know,
exactly.
Work with your colleagues. That's it.
Thank you so much, because we also have this problem in nursing.
Yes.
Where they're like, oh my God, you're leaving me so much job. But this is a continuity of care.
Exactly.
This is, like we always say, like, nursing is 24/7.
Yeah. You know what? Today you have a lot of work. Tomorrow you have a lot of work. You know, it goes around. It
exactly.
Goes around.
And I think, like, helping each other, you know, the good karma comes back to you.
Exactly.
They don't help you, but at some point in your life, you know what? You're winning. You're
exactly.
winning and you're getting more blessing. That's how I see it.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I never refuse to help someone. And even though, let's say, they refuse to help me, I'm just like, you know what? Whatever, man.
Yeah.
I'm here to help. This is a helping job
again.
So that's what we should
exactly.
be doing. So my next question mm-hmm. is, was the switch from home care to hospital was because of COVID, or was it just I wanted to explore more mm-hmm. of my like different avenues of this profession?
Yeah. Well, for myself, I've always wanted to work in a hospital. I mean, then again, I could be vain, but the Grey's Anatomy life, you know, like, what is that? What is it? Is it really like that? But the medical field always kind of intrigued me. So when I had the opportunity, I did make that switch. It also was a timing in terms of really knowing who I wanted to be as a social worker. I felt like at some point, the timing with COVID and other factors, I felt like I wasn't doing the type of social work I wanted to be doing in the community. And then I came to the hospital and I am loving it.
That's amazing.
But I will always say that I did love my job when I was working as a community social worker.
Absolutely.
And it helps you be more understanding of what happens on the other side.
Right. It grounds you.
I'm mindful, you know. I'm mindful of what dumping is to a community social worker.
So,
as much as possible, I try to give as much as information, and when there's a discharge, you should know this beforehand, because, you know, then you get surprises and you're like, you knew that information and you didn't tell me.
Right.
And here I am learning on the, you know.
And I think also is that it's so nice because you came in from the mud. I would say you came in from the mud. So then when you got a better chance of, like, you know, in your profession, you understand what it is to be in that position. So you can never be really, like you said, you become more mindful.
Yeah.
You don't judge the other, you know, the other side of the profession.
Yeah.
And you work better.
Exactly.
Just like for nurses, for us, what our nursing teachers would always say is, like, work as a PAB, like, work as a CNA, because then you will understand that this is still part of your job as a nurse. And you should never forget that, you know, that though, like, our profession, I'm pretty sure, like, social worker have other profession, sub-profession under them that used to be their part of their job. But since social work is now, like, has to focus on more prioritizing big jobs, they had to, you know, give those small little jobs to another sub-profession.
Yeah.
And for us, it's CNAs.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, some nurses forget sometimes that cleaning patients, taking care of patients, and bathing them, brushing their hair was part of our profession before.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're not all medication and just, like, putting in, like, pads and everything.
Exactly.
And that's really nice to know. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really, really good to know. And I guess for anyone who's listening right now who's a social worker, I hope you're learning a lot from Jackie. I love this. I love this, Jackie. Now, let's proceed to the questions that a bunch of people from social media ask towards you.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Oh my God. This is like hot seat type of thing.
Is this okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, guys, this is now the hot seat for our beautiful social worker, Jackie. you guys have asked her so many questions, and I literally took every single question that you guys wanted me to ask her, and she is going to answer this. Our first question, someone asked, how do you leave things at work, especially the heavy cases? Like, mm-hmm. how do you disconnect work from life?
Yeah. So, again, the magic word. Boundaries, 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 boundaries. Okay? I mean, it's the most important thing. So, for me personally, I really try to physically separate myself from Jackie being at work and Jackie being at home.
So Jackie social worker, yes. and Jackie mom, Jackie wife, Jackie as herself is yes. separate.
We try. Easier said than done.
Right.
But when I leave at the end of the day, I tell myself I am leaving the building. And it could be visual, you visually imagining this too. I am leaving the building. I am leaving the cases in the building. I'm exiting. So I'm going home to be with my family, to be with my husband.
Love it.
It's a tomorrow problem.
As simple as that.
As simple as that. It does sound, you know, maybe easier said than done.
Right.
But mentally thinking about it and physically separating yourself, I am leaving. And, right. you know, I make it a point that I try as much as possible to not do anything work-related once I exit the building.
Exactly.
Because that could be so easy to continue and do all of these things.
Exactly. The stress just continues and it becomes a pattern, and then the pattern becomes a habit, exactly. and the habit just like destroys you.
Yes.
And I think that's one thing also I've learned as a nurse is yeah. because the heavy cases, the heavy patient situation I have had to dealt with, mm-hmm. some of them, I carried them all the way home.
Yes.
Just because they're so, I don't know, like they're so emotionally like dragging.
Yeah.
And like the trauma is just in your head. And it keeps replaying and replaying and replaying. And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like how could have had this happen?
Yes.
Like in my care.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
It's crazy.
I think guilt.
Yeah. Guilt is real. And honestly, one of the first things also is even just acknowledging, you know what? This is a messed up case. Right. This is beyond me. This is like Hollywood worthy. What is this? Just saying it, like it's normal. Like, you know, if you're feeling some type of way, it's normal because it's a heavy case. You're seeing something that you've
never seen before.
Yeah. If you think you've seen something, don't worry. Something's coming back to you. You know, like there's always something new.
Mm-hmm.
But really just one acknowledging. This is tough. Okay.
The acknowledgement part.
Like, don't try to minimize and say, you know what? It's really not that bad. It is bad. Okay.
It is fucking. So thank you.
You know, like if I'm having a day and I'm like, you know what? Today's a tough day. I'm dealing with a tough family. I'm dealing with tough patients. They say it. You know, like
right.
acknowledge.
Verbalize it. Like I am freaking angry
right now. You know, just say it. I'm so upset with the family. You know what? You try to be as professional as possible when you're in kind of. But the second you leave the unit and I get to the department, I'm like, you know what? I'm so angry.
Like,
you
know, F this
you
shit.
You know what? I can't right. believe that they told me that. I can't believe that this is what's going on.
Oh right my now. God, that's crazy.
So acknowledge it. Physically leave it behind and get some support. You know?
Yeah, I think the support was the best therapy medication I've ever had.
Yeah.
Like having like a supportive family and friends.
Yes.
You know, outside of the job.
Exactly.
Really do help to kind of like get you out of that mindset.
Yeah.
The whole situation.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a support system?
I do. I have a wonderful support system. I mean, my husband is wonderful.
What does your husband do?
My husband works at a pharmacy.
Look at you dating a pharmacist.
Okay. He's not a pharmacist, but he works at a pharmacy.
Okay, he works at a pharmacy. But still, you know what? You're dating a healthcare worker. That's still a healthcare worker for me. Oh, that's amazing. So, and you guys been together for how long?
We've been together for 14 years, actually.
That is so cute. Oh, I'm happy for you guys.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Now you guys have a little baby.
We have a little one. Yeah.
Is it a boy or a girl?
It's a boy.
What's the name?
Isaiah Miles.
That is the cutest. I love the name Isaiah. Yes. And my, that's cute.
Spider-Man. You know?
That's really cute. Okay. Well, going back to the next question. Best and worst outcomes you have seen as a social worker?
I mean, there are a lot. But I think the best outcome is really when you see someone at their worst in really horrible living conditions or whether it be emotionally, mentally, or physically living in squalor. And then you see them, you're able to journey with them until you're able to either find them a new home or either find a new placement for them. And then you see them thriving because they're in the environment that they need to be in. And you see them afterwards. It's the best feeling.
See,
you know?
We're so similar as us and nurses are so similar. Like for us too, for me too, my best is like when my patient is so sick, I've seen them on their worst and then they got back on their feet.
And then you see them and you're just like, you look great.
I know, like you did that. Like, it was like you ate that whole 1 year of hospitalization.
Exactly.
Oh, that's amazing.
Worst outcomes, it's a little bit tough. But I mean, I think the worst outcomes is really one of the values of social work is the right to self-determination, which means that sometimes people are going to make bad decisions and they're allowed to make bad decisions. So sometimes having to see them make bad decisions and respecting it is tough to watch, you know, when you see them making a choice
that you're just like, you already know you're gonna get into like a lot of trouble
I'll see you here in a week,
2 weeks.
I'll see you back here. But it's always tough, you know, knowing discharging a patient or seeing someone go, knowing that they're probably not making a good decision, but you also,
or they're just not gonna make it in the community, and you know that in the next 5 days you're gonna get them back and it's the same circle of crap again.
Yes, but they have the right to self-determination, so let them do it, and then you come back and you would hope that when they come back,
you can change them. At some point
they will
change,
they will want to change.
Exactly. That's us doing nursing. It's just like, you know what, if you refuse your medication, if you want to get out of the hospital, go for it.
Yeah.
It's your life.
Yeah.
It's your health.
Yeah.
And we'll meet tomorrow.
Exactly.
When you're back.
Exactly.
When you're back. Oh. Next thing is, what is the best way an occupational therapist can support a social worker? This is cute because it's coming from a social. This is coming from another healthcare worker who you work hand in hand, I'm pretty sure. Because whenever I call my social worker,
you call the OT.
I was like, OT. SW, come on in. Join the ride. Join the fun.
Exactly. Well, shout out to all the OTs out there. I do love OTs. OTs are also...
they're amazing.
Amazing. The profession is so vast. So I don't know where this person works. But specifically for hospital social workers, I mean, often we do focus a lot on discharge planning. So an occupational therapist, we work again hand in hand.
Right.
Nursing,
always.
We all help each other to kind of get that big picture of who is this person, who is this patient.
And how can we maximize the help they need so that they can thrive outside of the hospital.
Exactly. How could we optimize, you know, this person so that they're really living in their best capacity, functionally, socially, medically as well. So an occupational therapist my advice is really just work with your social worker, you know, and do your assessment jointly. You know, again, don't work in silos. What information do you need, or do we go in together, you know?
Right, the proper communication so that we can actually work together, because I think, like you said, like there's nothing better than if we did every single step together.
In a perfect world, we would. I mean, unfortunately.
I know, it's really hard because, you know, we're short staff in this and short staff in that.
Exactly.
And then someone has to do more. But just like marriage, right? It's never 50-50. It's like 90-10 some days. Some days it's like 40-80. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But it's understanding and really communication is the key.
Exactly.
I think.
I agree.
Communication is key. Yeah. Love it. Love it. Yeah. Oh my God, you guys, this is a lot of writing. Don't you guys think that Jackie sounds like a therapist? I feel like she's been through a lot. And if she's my social worker when I'm old and grumpy and stuff, I think I will be happy. I will be happy. Please come back to home visit when I'm old. And please take care of me. I'm kidding. Next. What is the worst doctor's mistreatment you've ever witnessed or involved in? You guys are crazy for these questions. Have you ever been mistreated since you work in a hospital? I mean, us nurses, I can tell you a lot, baby.
Mistreatment is real, unfortunately. I wish it wasn't, but it happens on all levels, you know, whether it be from the patients themselves, from family members, from other colleagues, from other professionals. Worst mistreatment specifically from a doctor. I think to me, the biggest mistreatment is just totally disregarding the profession.
Right.
I think that's what that's what it would be.
Right. You it's like they feel superior.
Yeah. And you know what? I really hope that there's going to be a switch in the future of healthcare when it comes to this. Mm-hmm. I have to say the team I work with is wonderful. It is really, the doctors work quite hand in hand with the team. But sometimes, you know, the total disregard, it's a clearly social case.
Exactly.
It's clearly social. I will never disrespect you and say, oh, that's medical, and let it go.
I know, because at the end of the day, they will find you because they cannot figure it out.
So it's just like, you know what? No, it's really not a big deal, or being told that I was making the case worse than it actually is.
That's really, really irritating.
Yeah.
And like I said, like as I was shamed by a doctor at some point for advocating for my patient. And I'm like, excuse me, I am here because this is my patient. Exactly. And the reason why you know information about this patient is because that information came from me.
Yes.
Because I'm the 24/7 person who's been seeing this person. So I was like, why feel like you know more? Like, we have a total complete different profession.
Exactly.
And maybe you repair, but my healing hands, baby.
Exactly.
Don't disregard that, because without that, I don't think you can stay with a patient for 24/7 type of thing. And again, I'm not saying that all doctors does this, but like, you know, those cases of professionals who think that they are superior over the others, and it's not like we're all equal here because we're a multi-professional disciplinary team. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's mind-boggling.
Exactly.
Like, how are you in the profession for less than, like, you know, 5 years and you already feel like you are better than everyone else?
Exactly.
Or, like, you've been in it for 30 years and you feel like, well, because of my experience, I know better than you do. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You know what? Leave the social things to the social. I leave the medical things to you, and it's okay. You know, if I'm worried, it's because I'm worried. You know?
Exactly, because I've seen this before.
I'm worried. And I mean, it's a difficulty working in hospitals too, because, you know, it's a hospital, right? It's not a refuge. But when there's a situation that's concerning and all they care about is discharges, and you're trying to advocate to say, you know, literally, this person is going home to nothing, okay?
Talk about that more, because I feel hot. Because, like, you know, the worst, my worst freaking fear and my ick about some doctors is that where they're like, they go to the patient's room and they tell the patient, you're discharged. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. And then the patient comes into you. They're like, yeah, I'm packing. I was like, packing where? Well, my doctor told me I'm supposed to what?
Yeah, and your is your medication prepared? Are your CLSC services resumed? Do you have everything you need? Will someone come pick up the patient? Because
did the social worker prepare your bathroom so that you don't fall again?
You know, like, oh, is everything Lord. Ready? This Does the family member know they're coming home?
Thank you
I'm
so
sorry,
much.
I'm sorry, do they have shoes? Okay, because sometimes...
Where the fuck is their wallet? The wallet that they brought here in the hospital that's still missing.
The red jacket is missing, you know?
I love... Oh my God, we could talk forever, Jackie. Oh my God. See, the frustration is coming out, Jackie. I needed to fan myself because I'm getting hot in here. You feel me so much.
I feel you.
It's
crazy. Of course.
And again, we're not shitting on doctors.
No.
I have loved and love so many doctors, but those cases of, you know, and again, there's always going to be bad people and good people, but it's just that if it crosses your path, you're fucked because you have to deal with it type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on. Next. What is the most unhinged patient interaction you have? I love this because it's like so nursing. Like, I can answer that for you guys. I can answer that.
Unhinged. I mean, I've had a lot of unhinged family dynamics. Those have been exciting.
Oh my God, a tea.
You know, when you're having a family meeting and you're discussing what the future of this patient will be, you know, are they going to continue to be able to live at home? Are we going to be considering going into long-term care? And then the siblings don't agree.
Oh, Lord.
Or they're completely disregarding the patient. I mean, I've had screaming matches in the hospital conference room.
And you're just like, I'm just here to do my job?
I mean, they were literally standing up on top of chairs, of tables, and insulting each other. You have to physically separate people from literally fighting when the patient is right there, you know? Like
the patient is just like intubated and just like...
How about you?
It's like...
There's been a lot of unhinged.
It's just so like similar to... I mean, you work in a hospital, so you know. It's so similar.
Have I been hit before? Yes. I mean...
You know,
there's all these things. Is it okay? It's not okay. But I do work with a geriatric population. So, people trying to escape the unit, you know.
Many times,
you know, literally.
You've seen some stuff
I've seen.
And people cannot confirm this better. Because they're like, John, is Mr. Smith for real?
You know what? I laugh at Mr. Smith because I've had him... Mrs. Smith. Okay.
Do you hear that? She got the wife of Mr. Smith.
I've had a Mrs. Smith who literally climbed the toilet and then pushed the ceiling and tried to climb the ceiling and fell on her head. But
Oh my lordy Christ.
But there are people who try to climb.
I know. And people don't understand that, like, real. Geriatric patients are the strongest pop. They're stronger than you ever think.
We've had people throw chairs.
Oh.
You know, they're like Superman. You know, when they want to do something, they've got it.
They will. Not even dementia or delirium can stop them.
No, absolutely not.
That's crazy. Next. Do you ever wish or think of changing to another career? This is a good question because people have been asking me today, like, John, if you hate nursing so much, then why don't you go to another profession? Because I was like, you know, I don't hate this profession.
Exactly.
It's the condition, baby.
Absolutely. I agree.
So for you?
I agree. You know, I love social work. Working in the public sector makes it hard. You know, the conditions that you're working in, the pressures that you're getting from different levels makes it difficult at times. So is it that I hate sometimes? Yes. But again, it comes back to if you love your job, you kind of just push through and you're like, you know what?
Thank you.
The profession's evolving. But it doesn't mean that, you know, you don't hate it some days.
Exactly. You know? I think we've all hated our job.
Exactly.
At some point. But really, it's the passion that you have towards it, the love, the heart that you have towards it.
And you know what? You have to complain or you have to vent to let out steam.
Thank you. It's not
always going to be rainbows and butterflies.
Right. If patient can complain, why can't I?
Exactly.
If they can tell me, like, I don't like the social worker, well, I don't like you too.
Exactly.
Oh, that's so funny. Next. What do you wish? Oh, I like this question. What do you wish nurses would know or do to make your job easier? Yes, what do you want us nurses to do? Because I know, like, you know, my social worker in my unit, she straight up, she's like, you guys suck at giving me information.
Okay.
Give me better.
I will say this again, context, hospital social worker. Having a patient or a client's social history.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not telling you to go into the whole life history. You can tell me where they live and who they live with. I mean, sometimes it's just basic. Who does the person... Do they live alone? Oh, I'm not sure. Where do they live?
Right.
You know, it matters.
I am so sorry. I'm like, so I'm like this at some point. Listen, sometimes it's just a tiredness. I'm just like, oh my God, I didn't even have a chance to do that. But yeah.
It makes a difference if a person is totally isolated or they're living with a...
With someone.
Or, you know, someone that has a 24/7 caregiver paid for around the clock versus someone that's living alone, it makes a big difference.
Right. Because then that's how you guys are going to evaluate the help you're going
to
give, right?
And risk factors, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's nice.
Did you want us to give you more information about the whole shebang or do you just want like straight facts? Like,
it depends what the case is.
Right.
You know, sometimes the families and the patients will give the nurse all of the tea. And then I'm like, you know what? That's why I love the nurses. Because then it's like, I'm not on the unit in every single room 24/7.
Man, I love giving tea to social worker.
Yeah, it's like, what happened last night? They did what? Okay, thank you. That's very good to know. Or the family member visited and this happened.
And to preface this, we're not... Okay, we love drama, okay? But we don't just love it because we love... I mean, we do love it, okay? But the thing is, it helps us really plan and do things. Like, exactly. If I tell you, like, Mr. Smith actually punches me in the thing and, like, starts screaming at me, you know that you're going to need some type of, like, I don't know, camera in the house or some type of, like, security for anyone who's going to that house because he can do that to someone, right?
Exactly.
And it's not, like, just gossips. It's help. Yeah. It's helping.
Exactly. If a patient is violent, you want to know that information because I'm going to be a little bit more mindful when I'm meeting this patient.
Thank you.
And also, if they're going back home, I'm sorry. The people that are going to come and visit this person should know that information as well.
Thank you.
You know? Like, why are you gatekeeping the information?
Keyword, gatekeeping. Let's not gatekeep any information, you guys. I love it. Next. How do you prevent yourself from getting attached from a case? Deep, baby.
This is deep. I mean, you know what? We are all humans. There are some cases that I will forever hold in my heart and I will remember them forever. And it's just, again, knowing what your boundary is, but it doesn't mean that you don't feel attached to them. Yeah. We feel, I mean.
Because you're human.
You're human. You know, you meet them and you learn about what their life was like. And when you leave, you're practically crying because you're like,
like, I wish I could have done more, but, know, like, this is the only thing I have.
Exactly. But, I mean, I think it's really knowing what your role is and setting that boundary as well. What am I here to do? Reminding yourself, what am I here to do? And where is my limitation? Is your way of, you know, setting that boundary.
I love it.
Again, doesn't mean that you don't feel. It's just knowing where you stand.
Like, you can feel all the feelings.
Of course.
But it's just that, when do you put that end on that feeling? When it's getting too much?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's knowing where you draw the line. Hmm. When am I no longer acting as a healthcare professional and I'm acting as a friend or as if I were a family member?
Oh my God, it happens so much to
and
me.
And it's so easy. It's so easy.
So easy.
Because you're, again, we're in the helping profession. We're in it because we wanted to help people.
Thank you.
So sometimes when you're at the point when you're, you know what, I want to do so much more for you, but actually I'm bordering on unethical.
Right. Like, sometimes you're just like, what? Is this still part of my thing or am I doing this as a friend?
You will do things above and beyond and that's okay. But sometimes it's, you know,
you got to put like a,
you set a boundary, you know, are you buying a patient lunch
every day or is this just a one-time thing?
You know, it's... But it's setting that boundary, knowing where it lies. And again, if you're not sure, talk to your colleagues.
Right.
Like, sometimes you just need to be
transparent, I think.
And speak to someone you trust in your workplace or wherever you find your support. You know, sometimes you just need a little bit of a reflection. Am I really doing too much? Have I been too invested in this case?
Right, and someone will tell you.
And someone will tell you. Like, the good people will tell you.
Right, the people that you trust. It has to be the people that you trust, you guys, because not everyone is your friend and not everyone has to know. You know, every single information in your life.
You know, there's certain people that if they find out what you did, they're gonna take it the other way.
Exactly.
But someone you trust and be like, you know what? Mm-hmm. What would you have done in that situation?
Right.
And then sometimes just having that sounding board is key.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. I love, 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 love that. Next question. How do you identify if someone actually needs help or if they're just taking advantage of the service? I can answer this for you, but like, you answer this for them.
You know,
this is your question.
I always give people the benefit of the doubt.
Me too, but like.
But at some point.
Sometimes you're just like, I know.
When you're playing me, I know you're playing me. And difference is, you know, there are people who understand what criteria are.
I know, because they've been in it.
Because they've been in it. And there are people who also shop around.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. The healthcare system is quite small. So when you start to shop around, we know.
Right.
We know. And whenever a person needs something, I'm more than happy to identify that there's a need. But if you're abusing the system, you're abusing the system. And I will have no chill to be like, sorry. You're on the wait list, or sorry, I can't sign you up this time, or
right,
you know,
right.
I'll give you another resource. But
and people gotta understand this, that like, because some people will literally make it make sense in their head, like, oh, I'm paying my taxes. The reason why you're getting paid is my taxes, so I deserve all of this. No, because there are priorities.
minority people who actually needs help and who actually need those resources more than you do. Yes.
And there are when you've received the same resources over and over again, at some point we rotate, you know.
Right.
Other people deserve like, babe, to be signed up to the program or someone else deserves that check, that financial help that you could get, you know, like.
I mean, exactly. Exactly. Know. At some point, you know, if you're getting help, your life should be improving. Mm-hmm. If it's the same state and status again and over and over and over again, and you're just literally just riding the boat just to ride, baby, there's an end to it.
And that's your choice. And you made that choice.
Thank you.
You made your bed.
Goodbye. Goodbye. You lost the bed. Next. How... wait. How... boom. Here. Next question. How can other healthcare workers make social worker... repeat. How can other healthcare workers make social workers feel more integral to the team as you guys play a huge role in the system?
I think it's really about stepping your ground and knowing, taking up space. Mm-hmm. You know, those who have worked with me know that I'm a very vocal social worker.
Period.
But when you're sitting in a room with other professionals, make yourself known. Mm-hmm. You are the social worker. Here we are. We are here for this. Try as much. Again, communication is key. Try to work together. I'm really big with, you know, team building or really trying to make connections with...
I love you,
with
Jackie.
Your, with your colleagues, because that's how you become an integral part of the team, you know? Take, you know, try to find out what does your other colleague do? You know, what do the doctors do? What do the occupational therapists do? Know that there's value in what everyone else is doing just as much as yours.
Exactly.
So in order to be a team player, you need to know what other people do, you know.
Right. Like to be a leader, you need to be a good follower. And to be a good follower, you need, you know,
exactly.
You're going to be a good leader if you are.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing, amazing, amazing.
And you know what? When you're a social worker, it's really easy to just fade in the background because it's a very, hospitals at least, it's a very medical world.
It is.
It's easy for your social work opinion to be
pushed away.
So stand your ground. You're a social worker for a reason. Trust your gut and, you know, make your professional opinion known.
But I don't know. Because for me, honestly, I consider you guys handling cases medical too.
Because
honestly, you guys, though you deal with a lot of like social stuff, man, you guys sit down on that room with us every single freaking morning and hear every single fucking story. And you know the diagnosis, you know medical terms. So I don't, baby, you guys are more qualified to be in the hospital like everyone else. Because literally, I remember those days when they just sit there and they know. My social worker is like, yeah, we had this patient with Guillain-Barré syndrome. And I was like, girl, I'm pretty sure I've never even heard of that. And you're telling me that? And she explains it to me. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so I feel like you guys really play a huge part in the system. Because without you, I don't think we're going to be able to function. That's something I fully and really believe so. Because I already have a lot of my own life and shit situation and, you know, dealing with my patient. And imagine, like, I have to do with their social stuff, too.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's nice to hear. It's refreshing to hear, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, social work is so vast, but, you know, that other professions recognize it. It's just as important.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Next question. It's, what is your main concern when it comes to homelessness?
Wow, this is like a Miss Universe question.
All right, like, hi. I do believe that our children is our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way.
My main concern, in terms of, but in all seriousness.
I know, right?
It's a big question, but my main concern is that there's a lack of resources, funding, because in order to solve homelessness, there needs to be resources, there needs to be funding to have the proper care that the homeless population needs.
Thank you.
I mean, it is a big, it's a very complex
problem,
social problem. I mean, that plays on many levels. And you're talking about, you know, a person's social background, a person's, you know, mental health issues, but also in order to help them, you need to have the resources and the funding.
Right. And it's not up to us, healthcare workers, to fix the big problem.
Oh, yes. And when doctors think that someone comes in homeless and the social worker is going to make them non-homeless when they exit the hospital, sorry, it's not always realistic.
I love you, Jackie, because you're just spitting facts and facts and facts.
I mean, I'm not going to solve homelessness for right. in one admission.
Like, blame your governors. Blame your government, not us. Like, don't put, like, they put it on us.
You mean they don't have somewhere to go back to? You mean they came in without a home?
You mean,
I'm going to find them a home.
Like, you mean you're a social worker and you cannot buy me a house?
I'm sorry. My back pocket. My back pocket, you know?
Like, I'm sorry, but, like, aren't you not supposed to fix my financial issues and bring back a million in my bank?
You know what? Like, I've been in debt for 65 years. Social worker, consult, financial problems. Oh, wow.
Like,
I have that power.
Yes. Let me just take some 50 million in my pocket here that I get paid for every single month and give it to someone.
So don't feel guilty that you're not going to solve the social problem that's been right. there for decades, or the marital problems that have been there,
Ooh.
Or the family problems that have been there for years.
Ooh.
We're not going to fix them. We no. can try to mitigate mm-hmm. them, but you're not gonna fix them.
It's really crazy. Oh my god. You guys, we're just venting to each other in here. I know the healthcare workers listening to this, the nutritionists, the occupational therapists, even the teachers, the nurses, everyone. I know you guys are giggling and laughing and agreeing and screaming with us because, baby, this is so relatable. Oh my god. Next. Okay, two more questions because you guys have asked her, like, you bombarded her with so much questions, okay? We could sit here forever, Jackie. Oh my God. Okay, two more questions. Let me just pick in here. Okay, three more because I want to ask this question. Do you guys hate us nurses?
No. I mean, again, I won't speak for all social workers, but I love nurses. I mean, the nurses I work with, no, I love you guys so very much. And I always say the nurses, the PBs, are our eyes, you know?
Exactly.
When I work with my, you know, when we're in any type of situation to be teaching, I say your best friend is the nurse,
right?
The PAB. Because if you want to know what happened, they're going to tell you. Nobody else is going to tell you.
We're the tea. We carry the tea and you guys drink it.
You know, day shift, night shift, they're going to tell you everything. No one else has all of it. You know,
mm-hmm. It's so crazy. And I like it when you guys sit down on our nursing unit and just like read our freaking notes.
Yes. Yes.
I remember a social worker. He's literally drinking his coffee like...
We read them all, you know, all of your notes. The details. Oh, okay. So you know
I love it.
Progress notes are important.
I know. So important. You get chart, baby, chart.
Your charting will protect you, although...
I know.
It's tough, but
remember, guys, if it's not documented, it never happened.
Exactly.
Thank you. Put everything down, baby. Yes. Even the smallest bit. Sorry. There's another one. Someone's like, are you okay, girl? I know you've seen some stuff.
Am I okay? I am okay. I am on mat leave. So I have to say right now, I am
living my best life.
But you know what? It's not to say that. There have been some tough moments. It's not to say that I haven't cried at work. It's nothing to say that, you know, you do see it. But again, get the support. And if you don't get the support in the formal ways that you're supposed to get it, look for it. If it means your colleagues, if it means your family, get it. Because if you're not okay,
it's really going to drag you down.
Exactly.
And lastly, how do you help BIPOC clients that may have higher disadvantages in our society?
First one is really acknowledging, you know, that mm-hmm. there is a disadvantage for BIPOC mm-hmm. people. Being a person of color myself, you know, it's important that you raise that, you know, when you're doing your assessments mm-hmm. To really know in what ways could this person's social background be a disadvantage for them? Or mm-hmm. in what ways will they not be able to have their medical follow-ups once they go home? What are the barriers? So actually recognizing what challenges could be for BIPOC people. So I think it's really being vocal about it.
Exactly.
And raising it. Because again...
And not denying the fact that it exists.
It exists, you know?
And like, oh my God, you're exaggerating. That's too much of a new thing that just happened. No. Because... You know, you have to be a people of color to know what kind of discrimination, disadvantages that we go through and we have to deal with. And it's always pushed aside. Like,
I think one of the big things, at least in Montreal or in Quebec for BIPOC populations, or think of it, immigrant populations, is really when you're accessing medical care, understanding what is actually going on. Because any regular person, when you're talking in medical lingo, you don't understand. When you add the barrier of language and they don't understand what's going on, then I'm sorry, we have to figure out a way that they understand.
So
whether it's finding a family member that's going to be there, a translator, or if we become the translator ourselves, like whatever it is, like they need to understand and they deserve to understand what's going on.
It's their health. It's their life.
Yes.
They need to. And I have dealt with this. I mean, like talking for us Montrealers or Quebec, you know, in general, is that I think the biggest kind of discrimination for like immigrants is like when French professional thinks that if you cannot speak my language, which is French, then you are not getting the care that you need. Because I have seen so many times where like the patient cannot speak English, they only speak, let's say, Hindu or Arabic, they will still explain things in French as if I'm like, you're speaking on the wind, because they would never understand what's going on. And it's going to be passed on me because they're like, what the fuck did the doctor said?
Exactly. I mean, it's like with healthcare, you want it to be accessible. And, you know, that's just a reality you have to look at.
Well, look, Jackie, we could talk so much more. I mean, like, I love talking to like my healthcare worker people because, you know, we could talk forever and there's always something that we can talk about.
I know.
There's just a lot going on. And I feel so much better. I feel like we just unloaded traumas and like, it's like small things, but then it bothers you. But then you're like, oh, no one's going to understand it. And then someone actually sitting down with me and just like confirmed that I'm not crazy. And
I know.
All my experiences are valid.
They are valid.
Oh, God. And I like how gentle you are.
That's what I always tell people. You know what? Right. You gotta be zen, because if you let it, it's gonna eat you.
You look at things very positively. That's how I like sense it. And I think it's a good thing. And, you know, I have had in the past look at things more negatively, just because I think like, I guess this is how it's going to be. But then, you know, going to therapy, learning things that, hey, if you look at things more positively, but at the same time, recognizing that it's okay to feel that way, that your feelings are valid, that all your experiences is true and you're not a weirdo or you're not the only one experiencing it, makes you feel so much better.
For sure.
You know, mentally, physically, and like spiritually and all the least. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Oh my God. Well, Jackie, unfortunately, this is the end of our episode.
Yes.
But before we end this episode, I just want to ask you, for all the listeners right now, if you're a future social worker, a retired social worker, or a healthcare worker in general, can you give them a Miss Universe answer or a goodbye so that they can take home that information to them based off your experience as a social worker for 8 years and all the things that you've gone through?
Yeah. So for my fellow social workers, for my fellow healthcare workers, it's going to be tough sometimes, and that's okay. If you love it, keep pushing through. Look for the support wherever you could find it, even if it's not in your typical ways. And realize at the end of the day, we're all human. So be gentle to yourself. Don't take everything on your shoulders, because you're only one person in a big system. So, you know what? Do what you can. And at the end of the day, tomorrow is a new day. So
beautiful, 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 beautiful. Listen, Jackie, I'm so thankful to you that you accepted this, you know, opportunity to be here. I'm so glad that you're here. I'm so glad that I'm sitting next to you, because I praise every single social worker, because the work that you guys do really makes a lot of difference to lives. But I don't think our society would function without social workers. I think your job is such an important role in the healthcare system. I mean, we can give them medication, we can tell them all of these things, but you guys prepare them. Like, you guys equip them with the weapons they need so that they can thrive outside of the hospital or in their homes. And it's just, it amazed me how you guys have this resource. I mean, not enough resources, but there's resources and connections. And really, I hate making phone calls. I hate reading a lot of things. I hate, hate all the things a social worker is doing. But I am so, like, you know, bow down and on my knees for what you guys do. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for all the social worker. And you guys have to realize how important your role is, and that, just like what Jackie said, take up your space, because you deserve to be part of the multidisciplinary team, to be in the hospital, to be in home base or anything. You guys deserve what you work hard for and where you at in life. Thank you. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. And I hope you guys have learned a lot from Jackie. Because, oh my God, I was just telling her off the camera, she speaks so well, and I feel like she gave me a good therapy session. Just like that. She helped me. She's a real social worker, you guys. She's the real one. So again, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. And do me a quick favor again before you end listening to this. Make sure that you download this episode and all other episodes that you haven't listened to. Make sure you follow us and turn on notification on Apple and Spotify podcast. And make sure that you leave us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. And again, thank you, thank you, thank you so much, Bessie. I hope you're doing well. I hope you learned a lot. And make sure you keep those boundaries. You love yourself, self-affirmation every single day, and believe in yourself. And again, one last thing, make sure that your glass is full, your wine glass is full, before you share it to anybody else. Because if it's not, you should not be sharing it to anyone else. I love you, love you, love you so much, Bessie, and I will see you again next week. Bye. Oh my God, Jackie, that was perfect. I love this episode so much. I love this episode. You did so well. Thank you. Oh my God, you're amazing, Jackie.
Thank you.